Sometimes, especially with the videos that are darker, sometimes it is really hard for me to walk on stage. Like, it's so dark, I almost fell flat on my face over there. I'm just gonna be honest with you. I barely made it up the stairs, especially if I come from the hallway and then it's all black. I'm like, man, we gotta light that pathway somehow. My name's Chris. For those of you, you're like, who's this guy? Why is he talking about random things? My name's Chris. For those of you who don't know me, I'm lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And today we are wrapping up this conversation called Starting Point. If you haven't been with us, this is one of the longest series we've ever done. 8 weeks long, we've been walking through this. And the reason why we took that time is because it's that important. And we've been looking at, okay, how do we establish an adult starting point for our faith? For so many of us, our faith started with our parents telling us, well, you should believe this. And we took that and we ran with it until we encountered life. And then we began to try to take what we were told and match it up with life and didn't really work. And part of that was because we didn't listen well. Part of that is because we didn't get all the pieces to the puzzle. There's a lot of different reasons for that. But for a lot of us, we came to a point where our faith didn't seem to work with real life. And we didn't know how to be able to address the questions that had been asked and the conversations that we were being presented with. And so for some of us, we just believed through that. We just decided, well, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to continue to believe and push through it. I'm just going to believe harder. For others of you, you came to the point where you said, well, I don't really know if anybody can know what it is that they believe. And so I'm just going to kind of do this thing because this is what I do. And it just kind of feels good to me. And so I'm going to continue with this. You come to church every now and then, but you don't really believe it. You don't really know if you can really know and believe anything entirely anyway. For others of you, you've come to the point where you just said, you know what, I don't want anything to do with that. It's just a group of people who are all together looking for evidence of what it is that they believe. There's nothing really to it. And you walked away from it. But your friend invited you to come to be able to be part of this conversation, so you've been journeying with us and trying to figure out, okay, what would it look like? And this has been the question through the whole thing. What would it look like to have an adult starting point to faith? Understanding the questions, understanding the objections, understanding life the way that you now have experienced it. What would it look like to have an adult starting point to faith? And for the past 8 weeks, we've been walking through that. And we've looked at some of the most important aspects of a faith journey. And we began in week one and looked at really the cornerstone of this whole thing, and that this whole thing, it doesn't start with questions about Noah's Ark or all these other things. It starts with this cornerstone question of who is Jesus? And what are you going to do? What are you going to do with the fact that he walked out of that tomb? It all comes back to, it's all built around, it all points to that question. And then from there, we began to walk through, again, some of these more difficult aspects, some of these aspects of faith that, to be honest with you, many of us have misunderstood. And so we looked at, well, how do you actually have a relationship with God? What does Scripture actually say about how you enter into a relationship with God? And is it about what it is that you do and whether or not you get it right? And God has stepped into our lives and said, no, wait. I don't need for you to fix the mess. Remember this conversation? I don't need for you to fix the mess. I just need for you to, and we've said it over and over and over and over again throughout this series. I just need you to what? I just need you to trust me. We looked at this powerful aspect of faith that God says, no, our relationship, you're made right with me by trusting me. We looked at the difference between mistakers and sinners. We looked at what would actually wash away that sin. We looked at the power of grace and the unbelievable way that God, as he steps into our life, he doesn't just extend mercy, but he gives us grace. We looked at the role of rules, and is this a situation where you have to keep the rules to get in, or is this a situation where you're given the rules because you're in? And we talked through that. And then last week, we looked at this interesting aspect of belief. Kind of a fun conversation, a little bit of an uncomfortable conversation for some of us as we looked at the truth that if you have a group of people who come together and they all believe the same thing, they'll look for evidence of that and they'll just continue to encourage each other in that, even if it's not true. And so we asked this question, is that what we're doing? Or is there something different? And last week we ended as we looked at this, the powerful thing that makes following Jesus different, that it didn't begin with a truth statement or a truth claim, but that it began with an event. And again, came back to that question, who is Jesus and what are you going to do with the fact that he walked out of that tomb? Today, what I want to do is I want to bring this whole thing back together and I want to bring us to a close by looking at one last thing. And again, I want to go to another thing that Jesus actually predicted and another thing that I think that Jesus has actually been faithful in. Last week, we talked about how Jesus predicted his death and resurrection and then actually pulled it off. I want to talk to you about another thing that Jesus actually predicted and has been faithful with. The story is actually captured by Matthew. Some of you know Matthew's story. Matthew was a tax collector. Everybody hated him. He gave up everything to follow Jesus. And Matthew, as he's capturing the story of Jesus, he shares with us this moment. Jesus and his disciples are actually entering Caesarea Philippi. I actually have a picture of Caesarea Philippi here. It's not known for its nightlife. But as you look at this, there was once a time when this was a thriving city. As a matter of fact, during Jesus' life, this city's name was changed. It was changed because it was actually named in honor of Caesar Augustus. And one of the interesting things about this city as Jesus and his disciples are entering it is that not only was it named after Caesar Augustus, but some of you know your history well enough that you know that Caesar Augustus was actually the adopted son of Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was considered to be divine. He was considered to be God. And so therefore, Caesar Augustus was the son of God. And as Jesus and his disciples are entering this town that's named after the Son of God, Jesus asks his disciples a question. He says, who do people say that I am? And more specifically, who is it that you think that I am? There's a lot of back and forth, a prophet, maybe Elijah. There's all these different things that people thought about Jesus and all these different things that people said about Jesus as far as who he actually was. But then Jesus says, who is it that you think that I am? And Peter responds in Matthew 16, verse 16, he says this, you are the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of, and this is interesting that he says this, the living God. It's interesting that he says living because it seems that he's actually contrasting it with the Son of the dead God, which would have been Caesar Augustus. But he says, no, I know who you are. You're the Messiah. You're the Christ. You're the one who's going to rescue us, the one sent to rescue us. You're the Son of the real God, the living God. Jesus responds back to him and says, listen, you didn't come up with that on your own. As a matter of fact, that has been given to you by my Father. And then he says something really interesting. He says, and on this rock, I will build my church. And here's the prediction that Jesus makes. Now, at this point, there's just a few of them. There's just a few disciples. As a matter of fact, at this point in the story, there's just 12 with him. And Jesus looks at them and he says, I want you to understand something. On this rock, now there's a little bit of back and forth about the rock and whether he's talking about Peter and referencing Peter with the rock or whether he's referencing the statement that you are the Messiah, the Christ. Either way, it doesn't really change the prediction. He says, no, I want you to understand something. I'm going to do something. And he's been talking to his disciples all along about what it is that he's about and what it is that he wants to accomplish. He's been talking to them about the fact that he is going to die and that he's going to come back. But then he begins to talk to them about something else. He says, I want you to know not just that I'm going to do this, but then after I do this, I'm going to build something. Now, this word right here is an interesting word. It's actually a pretty significant mistake in translation. So when Matthew writes this, Matthew writes this in Greek. Now, Jesus spoke in Aramaic, but as Matthew is trying to capture what it is that Jesus says that he's going to build, Matthew uses an everyday Greek word. He doesn't use a word that is religious in any way, shape, or form. He uses a word that would have been used in everyday conversation. That Greek word is the word ekklesia. Now, ekklesia means a gathering. It means a congregation. If you were to say, hey, listen, a crowd got together for the football game, and you talk about that crowd, you might talk about it in terms of an ekklesia, a gathering or an assembly. And Jesus says, I'm going to build this gathering. I'm going to start this movement. There's going to be this massive group of people, this assembly that I'm going to bring together. And I want you to understand my mission. It's not just about how I'm going to die and rise again, but then I'm going to build something. Now, unfortunately, as translations took place, there's actually a German word that began to be used in place of ecclesia. And that German word is where we get the word church. I'm not going to share with you the German word, mainly because anytime you speak German, it sounds like you're cursing at people. But then also, Germans don't like it when you mispronounce it, and I probably would. So I'm not going to share that word, but that's where we get the word church. Now, unfortunately, church, the German word for church actually means house of worship. Now, this mistake in translation has actually plagued us for quite some time, because even now some of you think of what Jesus was building as a place as opposed to a group of people. When Jesus makes his prediction, he doesn't say, listen, I'm going to build these places. He says, no, I'm going to bring together this church. I'm going to start this movement, this ecclesia, this gathering, this congregation. And guys, I want you to know that I'm going to do this. But as you looked around at that time, it didn't look like it was actually going to happen. I mean, he was an outlaw at the time. As a matter of fact, just a short time later, he's actually put to death, and it really doesn't look like it's going to happen. And as we said last week, if you had gone to his disciples and said, hey, listen, who is Jesus? Or do you really think that Jesus is going to bring together that assembly? Do you really think Jesus is going to launch this movement? The disciples would have said, no, I'm going back fishing. This isn't going to happen. But then he comes back from the dead. And everything, as we said last week, changes. After he comes back from the dead, he brings together his disciples and he shares something with them. Listen, again, Matthew captures this. The same one who shared with us the prediction also captures for us the words of Jesus to his disciples after he has come back from the dead, after he has actually accomplished what he had predicted about his death and resurrection. Listen to what it is that he says to those disciples. Matthew 28 says, then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven on earth has been given to me. Now, this is a pretty arrogant statement. And the reality is that as you work through the life of Jesus, if you're going to be honest about the life of Jesus, you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with these statements. Because Jesus doesn't step in and say, hey, let me teach you some really good teachings. Some of you think that Jesus is just a really good teacher, and then he just taught some really nice things. Well, Jesus didn't step in and say, let me tell you some really nice things to believe, and I think that you should believe this about God. Jesus doesn't actually teach you how to be able to get to God. Jesus actually stepped in and said, no, I'm God, and I'm the way to God. And you're going to have to figure out what to do with these, because this is a phenomenally arrogant statement if he isn't who he said he is. But for those who are gathered with him in this moment, it's estimated there's probably about 120 people who are with him in this moment. They look at it and say, well, of course, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to you. I mean, we saw you get crucified, and now you're here. We understand all authority has been given to you. And Jesus says, I want you to understand, all authority has been given to me. And then listen to how he continues. He says, therefore, because of the fact that all authority has been given to me, I'm going to now commission you to do something. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. He says, therefore, here's what I want for you to do. Remember I talked to you about that assembly that I was going to build? Remember I talked to you about that congregation? Remember I talked to you about what I'm going to do? Not just that I was going to die and come back, but that I was going to do something remarkable, something powerful inside of the world. Remember I talked to you about, now it's time. And so he says, I want for you to go and I want for you to make disciples. In other words, I want for you to lead people to understand who I am and to follow me to find their way back to God. And he sends them into this mission. He continues, he says, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. And then he leaves. Seriously, that's what he, and then he leaves.
The disciples were actually pretty confused by that until God's Spirit came. And then the disciples begin to actually act on what Jesus had called them to do. And so they go into Jerusalem and they share that message that we talked about last week. You killed him. God raised him. We've seen him. Now say you're sorry. And the remarkable thing is that as they take this message into Jerusalem, this doesn't start out with a few people. So many religious movements, they start with a few people, and then over a couple hundred years, it starts to grow, and it starts to gain traction, and all of a sudden, it starts to take off. But when you look at the movement of Jesus didn't start slow. It started big. And so from the very first day that they take this message into Jerusalem, there's over 3,000 people who say, no, I've seen him. I've experienced him. And one of the reasons why you see so many turn to Jesus at the very beginning is because so many of them had actually seen him after he'd come back from the dead. And so many had actually heard his teachings, and so many had actually seen him do the miraculous things that he was doing all throughout the countryside. And so Peter goes out and he shares that message, and there's thousands of people who said, I absolutely believe that. I know that he is who he said that he was, and this thing takes off, and this unbelievable prediction of Jesus takes off, and it catches fire, and all throughout Jerusalem and the surrounding areas, all of a sudden people are turning to Jesus, and it looks like this thing is going to be unstoppable. But then a persecution breaks out. And people start to get a little bit nervous. And the disciples have traveled a little bit, and the persecution scatters the believers a little bit. But the reality is that the movement starts to slow down. And people are afraid for their life and afraid of what's going to happen if they actually communicate Jesus. And once again, just as with the cross, it looked like, man, that was a great prediction, Jesus, but it's not going to happen. Once again, you look at the story and you look at the situation, you think, well, it looked for a moment like it was going to take off, but I don't think it's actually going to happen until Jesus steps into the life of a man named Saul. And I love the story of Saul, because as Jesus steps into his life, he doesn't choose anyone that you would expect to continue the movement. As a matter of fact, he chooses the number one enemy of the movement. Because you see, the person that the Christians were afraid of was Saul. There was no one that they were more afraid of than Saul. And Jesus steps in and says, yeah, you. I'm going to use you. Because I don't want you to just communicate the message of who I am. I want for you to embody it. I don't want you to just talk about grace. I want for everyone who encounters you to experience it. Because there's no one who captures grace like you do. There's no one who understands grace and whose story better illustrates grace than the one who first killed my followers. And so I'm going to use you. And it may also have been because of the fact that Paul wasn't afraid to get on boats. Because you see, those original disciples, and this is an interesting thing when you look through the story of what it is that Jesus has done. Those original disciples, they didn't actually do what Jesus asked them to do. And this is a tricky thing. This is a tricky thing about following Jesus. Because when you begin to follow Jesus, not only does Jesus help you, not only does Jesus make it possible for you to be able to connect with him, but Jesus also makes it possible for you to be able to connect with those around you in ways that you never have before. I hear this all the time inside of our family here at Hoboken Grace. People will talk to me about the relationships that they've built inside of our family, and they'll say, man, I've experienced community like I've never experienced community before. It's an unbelievable thing when you begin to connect with people, not just on a social level, but when you begin to actually engage a spiritual journey with a group of people. And for those early disciples, as the church was launching, They didn't want to leave Jerusalem.
They wanted to stay. They didn't want to separate from one another. I mean, they wanted to be able to help one another. They wanted to stay together. But Jesus said, no. You need to go to the whole world. You have to understand what it is that I'm doing. But they didn't. And it looked like it was going to stagnate, but Paul steps in, and Jesus steps into Paul's life and says, no, we're going to take this to the world. And so Paul begins to travel from city to city to city to city, and all these little ecclesias, all these little gatherings begin to bubble up throughout the Roman Empire. And it gets to the point where not only are the religious leaders trying to destroy this thing, but it actually gets the attention of the emperor himself. And for 30 years, Paul spends his life sharing this message of Jesus all throughout the empire. These little ecclesias, these little gatherings are beginning to actually catch fire in these different places. Until, in his early 60s, Paul's thrown into prison in Rome. He's actually imprisoned in Rome twice. The first time they let him out, the second time Nero was in charge. And Nero had basically declared war on the movement of Jesus. And so this one that had been taking this message of Jesus throughout the entire Roman Empire, one morning is led out to be put to death. And he's led down through the Roman Forum. Some of you have been there. For those of you who haven't, it looks like this. You've probably seen pictures of it. This is what it looks like now. At the time, it was one of the most grand spectacles on the face of the planet. Probably the most. And he's led out of Rome. And he's executed. A short time later, Peter would be crucified upside down in Rome as well. And I've heard people talk about the moment of Paul's death, and I've heard people ask, can you imagine what it would be like if Paul could see Rome today? And can you imagine what it would be like if Paul could see all of the crosses that you see in Rome? But to understand that those crosses are not symbols of Roman power, but are actually symbols. And if you've ever been to Rome, you've seen it. There are crosses everywhere. But are actually symbols of the message of Jesus. What would it be like if Paul could see that where they actually sacrificed Christians to be eaten by lions, that there was a building built in honor of Peter? Some of you have seen this building. St. Peter's Basilica, a building adorned with a cross. What would it be like if Paul could see the thousands upon thousands of people who come to Rome, not to learn about Julius Caesar, not to learn about Tiberius, but the thousands upon thousands of people who come to Rome to hear the message of Jesus? What would it be like if Paul could see the thousands upon thousands of people who walk down that forum and ask their tour guide, not about Julius Caesar, but ask their tour guide, where is it that Paul was imprisoned? What would it be like if Paul could hear that today, even to this day, people name their kids Peter and Paul and name their dogs Nero and Caesar? I've heard people say, Paul would be shocked if he could see what has happened in Rome, but I would actually propose the opposite, because I believe that as Paul was being led out to his death, that although he didn't know how it would happen, Paul
knew it would happen. Why? Because Jesus had made a promise. Jesus had made a prediction that he was going to do something. And when Jesus makes a prediction that he is going to do something, he does it. And even when he was put on a cross and it looked like it wasn't going to happen, he did. And even when the disciples didn't obey and it looked like it wasn't going to happen, he did. And even when Paul and Peter were put to death, he did. And to this day, Jesus has been faithful with exactly what it is that he said he was going to do. That he was going to build his church. As Jesus continues in that moment, talking about what it is that he's going to build, he says something remarkable. And it should have given them insight into what it was that was going to happen, because he says this. He says, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, in other words, the gates of hell itself, will not overcome it. He says, I want you to understand something. I'm going to do something. And when something comes against it and it looks like it's not going to happen, I want you to understand something. I'm going to make it happen. And don't you for one second, in any circumstance, doubt whether or not I'm going to win. And whether I'm going to be faithful with what it is that I'm doing. Because this is how I'm going to change the world. Jesus, how are you going to change the world? You've just given your life for the world. You've literally gone to that cross for people to be able to know you and be able to find their way back to God. How are you going to change the world? I'm going to do this. I'm going to establish my church, my gathering, my people, and they will be my body that will take me to the world and will demonstrate to the world who it is that I am and what it is that I'm about. And there's all sorts of things that are going to come against it. And there's all sorts of ways that at times they're going to get it wrong. But nothing is going to overcome it. And to this day, he has been faithful to do just that. And as we come to the end of this conversation, and as we bring Starting Point to a close, I want to invite you to be part of what it is that he's doing, to be part of God's activity in the world. If we were to go around this room and I were to ask you, what is it that you love most about Jesus? I love being able to ask people this question. There's all sorts of different answers that I get back. And for some people, what they love most about Jesus is forgiveness. For some people, what they love most about Jesus is grace. For some people, what they love most about Jesus is the relationship and knowing that they're never alone. There's all sorts of different things. It really just has to do with who you are and how God created you as far as what it is that means the most to you about Jesus. But you know what it is that means the most to me? The mission. I love the mission. I love the fact that not only did God step into my life and say, you can be forgiven, but God stepped into my life and said, no, I don't want for you to just receive something from me. I want for you to do something with me. I want for you to know what it is to live a life that's actually significant. Not that's just significant for a few years, not that's just significant for 10 years, not just
Not just that's significant for the rest of your life. Not just that's significant for the rest of your life and your kids' life. No, I want for you to know what it is to live a life that's eternally significant. That will be talked about for all of eternity. And you know how he does that? He invites us into, to be part of his church. I want for you to be part of my body that brings the message of Jesus to the world. And that's not just available to those who stand on stage and communicate about who Jesus is. One of the things that I'm so excited about today is that we get to celebrate the step of baptism. And as we celebrate this step of baptism, I want you to understand something. What's taking place today is a symbol of something that is eternally spiritually significant. Someone who was disconnected from God, someone who was dead to God and God was dead to them, has now been made alive. And for all of eternity, their story will be different. For all of eternity, they'll be with him. And every person that they impact will be a result of what's happened in their life. And listen to me. That is not just a symbol of what I've been able to do as far as communicating from the stage. That is a symbol of the power of the church and the reality of the impact that we get to have when you're greeting people as they walk in that front door. One of the things I share with people all the time is, specifically with our greeters, is the reality that most people make up their minds. Some of you have heard this before. Most people make up their minds about whether or not they're going to come back to a church within the first 5 minutes that they walk in the front door, which means I have nothing to do with it. I can only screw it up. It means I have nothing to do with it. Has everything to do with how it is that they're welcomed. Has everything to do with whether or not they're able to find a place where they're able to actually engage. It has everything to do with whether or not the people are friendly and engaging as they walk in. All of that. And here's the reality of it. Jesus has invited us to be part of this together. He says, no, I'm going to build this assembly. I'm going to build this group, and they are going to take me to the world, and they are going to change the world, and they're going to live their lives in such a way that it's not just talked about for 5 years or 10 years, but that it's talked about for all of eternity. And God says, this is what I'm doing, and I want for you to be part of it. The journey of faith. The journey of faith is not a journey that's lived alone. And the journey of faith is not just about your reconnection with the Father. It's about you being part of God's activity on this planet. It's about you discovering the eternal life of significance that you were created for. As you discover your place in his body. As you discover how he wants to use your time, talents, treasures to change the world. As we come to the end of this conversation, I have one final question for you. What is your next step? As you look at the faith journey, from the perspective of what we've walked through for the past 8 weeks, what is your next step? For some of you, that next step is continuing to come here and to work through this with us. And you're beginning to learn about who Jesus is and what Jesus is about, but you may not yet be to that point where you're willing to trust him fully. And so your next step is, no, I'm going to continue to pursue this. I'm going to continue to pursue him and what he's about and whether or not I can trust him. For others of you, the reality is that you're at that point where you just need to take the step of saying, you know what? I'm done trying to figure it out on my own. I'm done trying to fix the mess on my own. I trust you. And for the first time, to give your life to him. For others of you, that next step is baptism, where you decide, I'm going to publicly proclaim that I trust him. I'm going to publicly proclaim that he has rescued me.
As a matter of fact, today we have one who's come to take the step of baptism, but I want to open that up because I know that some of you over the last couple of weeks have actually come to trust him. And today is your day. Today is the day where you need to decide, no, I'm going public. Some of you right now started sweating. You started sweating because you knew, and you're like, son of a gun, why did he bring this up? I don't want to do this right now. I don't want, but today's your day. And it's time for you to go public. For the one who gave his life for you. Anthony's actually going to be back here in the back right by the door. And as the van comes up in just a little bit, I'm going to give you the opportunity. You can go back. We're completely prepared for you. We've got clothes for you. Right now, you're thinking of every possible excuse. But today's your day. What's your next step? Will you hesitate? Or will you obey? For others of you, that next step is to decide, no, no. This isn't going to be an individual journey. I want to be part of what he promised that he's doing. I want to be part of God's activity on this planet. I want to be part of his church. And for you to decide whether that's jumping into a dinner group, whether that's jumping on an impact team, for you to decide no longer be an observer. No, no, no. I'm going to be a participant. Because I don't want one day to celebrate what God said that he would do. I want one day to talk about how I got to be part of it. What's your next step? Don't hesitate. Trust him. Follow. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray for those who right now are hesitating. As we come to the end of this conversation, you've made it so clear. Not just how you love us, not just what you're about, not just what you've accomplished, but you've made it so clear, your faithfulness. And the reality that you will not be stopped. You were not stopped in your pursuit of us. You were not stopped in the building of your church. Father, we want to follow you. We want to be part of what it is that you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen.